While the college library bought scholarly materials in the sciences and philosophy and the classics, the society libraries concentrated on English literature, especially poetry. But they also acquired books in areas such as biography and travel and politics and economics and history. The Loganian Society even printed their own catalog during the 1850s, and each society kept accurate records of their new acquisitions. The more important general periodicals were found in society collections. In 1871, the only American journal of general interest taken by the college library was The Nation. Subscriptions to Harper's and Magazine, Lippincott's, the North American Review, and Galaxy were paid for by the three society libraries, and the societies also paid for the binding and repair of these volumes. It's quite clear that even with their lofty goals, the societies did not receive the complete trust of the Board of Managers nor of the faculty. The faculty in particular tried to control the workings of these groups by requiring them to adhere to a number of rules. Some of these requirements related to the book collections. When the Everett Society was granted space in Alumni Hall in 1867, it was required to take the space assigned, not an area of their own choosing. Their books had to be open to any member of the college for use within the library building, though the society could draw up its own borrowing rules, which it eventually did. They were not allowed to include any books already in the collections of other society libraries or the main library. And most importantly, the society could only allow in its library those books which, quote, have previously been approved by the faculty in a faculty meeting, unquote. The last restriction was taken seriously in the next several years. John Dillingham, the librarian of the college at that time, informed the Everett Society in 1868 that any book found in the society library without having been approved by the faculty may be taken as forfeited and sold for the benefit of the college library. It's an interesting way of raising money. In 1868 and 1869, Everett Society minutes note occasional instances of faculty disapprovals. Still, even with the restrictions, nearly all books recommended for inclusion in the library passed muster with the faculty. The Everett Society acquired worthy titles for inclusion in their library, books that could stand proudly by those of other societies also on the north side of Alumni Hall, and books that were being purchased by academic and public libraries all over the country. By 1871, after only 5 years of collecting, the library had books by Longfellow and John Ruskin and James Russell Lowell. They owned Anthony Trollope's North America and Harriet Martineau's Biographical Sketches. There were also books on elocution, diction, and also more popular biographical and travel volumes. In later years, they bought books on such diverse topics as banking, American education, the civil service, business life in ancient Rome, a whole host of subjects. The borrowing rules promulgated by the Everett Society for its members do not today seem very unusual. Members were limited to 3 books at a time, and they could borrow books for as long as 2 weeks. Only bound periodicals would circulate, which is a common rule today in libraries. Fines were heavy. Failing to register for a book carried a fine of 10 cents, and fines for overdue books were 10 cents per week for the first 4 weeks, going up to 20 cents per week thereafter. The borrowing rules reiterated the college policy. The library shall consist of books and periodicals approved by the faculty. So at least publicly, the society was adhering to its agreement with the college. The problem was that the society library books and those found in the college library were not all the books the members wished to read. It's not that fiction was totally absent, but the selection was, judging from the 1871 Union catalog, very limited. There were fictional works of just 3 Americans, Nathaniel Hawthorne, Washington Irving, and Harriet Beecher Stowe. There were books of poetry by Scott and Bulwer Lytton, but none of their novels. There were, however, several novels by the British writer Mayne Reid, who was to be a favorite, incidentally, of Christopher Morley. Reid was famous for adventure novels set in exotic locales, and Morley claims to have discovered Reid while browsing in the college library. He also hints in his autobiography that Alan Thomas may have also enjoyed them in tender youth, which is quite possible because these books were acquired before 1859, and Alan Thomas was the librarian of the Loganian Society only a few years later. Perhaps he did read them. Perhaps this is why they survived until the 1890s for the young Morley to discover. The exclusion of novels was not unusual in American libraries in the period after the Civil War. Public librarians were concerned about reading habits, especially the reading habits of young women. Surveys showed that fiction accounted for between 65 and 85% of all books loaned by public libraries. And this was cause for concern by librarians steeped in the genteel tradition. Librarians wanted to guide the public towards better literature, and they considered reading to be serious business, something that should not be aimless or free from the restraints of conscience, as they said. A Haverford student writing for a student publication in 1880 echoes these sentiments. With regard to novels, he writes, "The poison in them is insidious in their nature," and he goes on to say that readers generally get incorrect, if not hurtful, impressions of the world and of mankind. Actually, in the 1860s and the 1870s, there were a number of articles by students about novel reading, and they always advise caution. It's much the same thing as television today. If you read too much, you know, you might rot your brain or something like that. But it's sort of fun to do, you know. The control, therefore, that the Quaker College placed on students as to reading habits was harsh, but not as extreme when one considers the times. The Quakers did consider the reading of novels, of fiction in general, to be baneful. It's been pointed out that Quakers, with their desire for the unadorned realities of life, frowned on literature that presented something less than the truth, which fiction, of course, does. Quakers, as pacifists, also would have rejected authors whose themes would seem to be fostering war and violence. And even into the 20th century, works by authors such as Sir Walter Scott would be excluded from Quaker schools and libraries. The paucity of fiction and recreational reading in general resulted in the founding of the Everett Society Archives, which included books that the membership knew could never be included in the library and alumni hall under their official banner. In February of 1872, the Everett librarian was directed to keep the books and papers in the archives as neat and orderly as the main library. The reading of these books was restricted to members of the society, although the society did reconsider this policy, and one suspects it wasn't always enforced. In April of 1872, the society appointed a curator of the archives, whose job it was to keep a list of books which have been or will be purchased for the archives. Now, the last words are significant because it shows that the archives did not grow solely through gift. The members were willing to allocate funds for this unofficial secret collection. We know a great deal about the books in the archives because the circulation register has survived. We know every user, everybody who registered, that is, and we know the books as well. Students signed for these books between April of 1872 and March of 1874. The register allotted a page for each eligible borrower. The user simply wrote down the titles of books taken from the archives and marked an R or an X or a check when it was returned. There were 46 eligible student borrowers during the two-year period. 124 book titles circulated a total of 418 times. Now, it's hard to compare that, what that really means, but to give you a comparison that sort of might put that number into perspective, if you look at the circulation of books in the main library in that period, we don't have statistics. The earliest period for which we have statistics on the main library was 1895. In 1895, there were 2,500 books that were borrowed, and the collection was about 32,000 volumes at that time. Proportionately, the archive collection circulated 44 times as much as the on a per capita basis as the main library did 20 years later. It's a bit of a bogus comparison, but just to give you some idea, that's a lot of circulations for a library with only 46 students borrowing.